This Labor Day at Lowe's, shop member-only doorbuster deals for a limited time. Save $50 on an Ego string trimmer, now $169. Plus, get 50% off select Holland pavers. Not a rewards member? Sign up for free today. But hurry, Labor Day doorbuster deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 9-1 while supplies last. Program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
People who almost died but lived because of a gut decision, what's your story? Story 1. I was traveling in the Philippines, in northern Luzon. That's the part always hit hard by typhoons. It was just the beginning of the rainy season. I was in Banaue and was planning to go up north to Sagada the next day. Saturday, the Lonely Planet describes this route as the scariest road in the world. It's solid mountain on one side and a deep, deep drop on the other. There was a jeepney scheduled in the morning and one in the afternoon. Everyone who knows me knows that I'm not a morning person. And if there is a later option, I'm definitely taking that one. On a whim, the night before, I decided to leave earlier and take the 8 a.m. Jeep Super out of character for me, and I'm still not sure why I did it. A few days later, on another bus, I chatted with this nice lady, and she asked me what places in the Philippines I had been to so far. Then she said, "Oh my God, have you heard about the jeepney accident on Saturday afternoon on the road from Banaue to Sagada?" Apparently, the jeepney I had planned to take came upon a mountain slide, lost control, and went down the side of the mountain. 10 people died. No one survived. Story 2. In high school, at a graduation party, I had a really bad feeling about the guy my friends and I had gotten a ride with. I'll call him H. I didn't know him well, but I saw him drinking and wasn't sure how much. He was supposed to be our ride home when the party was over. My one friend said she trusted him and not to worry. Well, I couldn't tell myself not to worry like she could. I said again to her that I didn't think it was safe to drive home with him. She insisted it was fine. Meanwhile, I had made a new friend that night. The first time I saw him, I felt like I should talk to him. Turns out he drove there alone and was staying sober to drive home. By 5 a.m., everyone was talking about grabbing after-party coffee and some snacks. People were piling into cars. I told my friend one last time that I wouldn't drive with H. I got in the car with my new friend. Knowing he was 100% sober, we pulled out onto the country road as it snaked through the trees. H came speeding out and passed us way too quickly. As we drove around the next corner, we went through a cloud of dust and debris. H's car was wrapped around a telephone pole. Two of the four passengers were dead, including the kid who got in the seat I would have been in. My friend was alive but has permanent injuries to this day. Story 3. I don't know if it was a gut decision so much as just being knowledgeable and acting, but I still think it was a pretty wild instance of a near-death experience. My family and I were on holiday in Thailand over the Christmas period years ago and were staying in a hotel close to the beach in Phuket. I was only 7, and my two brothers were even younger. We had been bugging my parents to go jet skiing for days on end, much to their annoyance. But on Boxing Day, they finally relented. After breakfast, we went down to the beach to look around for a jet ski rental. But before anything could happen, my dad, a surfer of many years, saw the tide receding in a way that was completely unnatural and recognized the signs of a coming tsunami. We thought he was overreacting, but he was deadly serious. So we raced back to the hotel. We considered running for the hills, but after consulting with another couple who also recognized the impending disaster, we decided to sit tight in our building, which was relatively short and stout, plus we were on the top floor. Sure enough, the tsunami came and bulldozed Phuket. It only destroyed the lobby of our building. We were safe. I have no doubt we all would have died if my dad hadn't known the early signs of a tsunami. We were also on Phi Phi Island a couple of days before, and if we had been there on Boxing Day instead, we might not have survived. Just an all-around crazy experience that I'm lucky to have made it out of. Story 4. I was out late one night. My car had broken down in the middle of an interchange that was so deserted. There was no one around for miles. I did what any other person would do and called a towing service. When I finally got through, it was almost 1 a.m. I decided to go take a bathroom break near some bushes when suddenly I heard some bikes approaching the car. I wanted to come out immediately and stop them for help, but my legs froze and I hesitated. From behind the bush, I saw them try to ransack the car, and apparently they were all armed. Thank goodness I remained still because these guys meant business. They fired multiple shots into the windshield and door. It was an old Toyota Hilux, so there was nothing valuable in it. They even busted all four wheels with bullets before getting back on their bikes and speeding off. I believe they were all high, which is likely why they didn't check around or maybe assumed I had just deserted the area. Long story short, I walked a bit further into an open field and sat on the thick branches of a tree where I could see anything approaching. The towing truck didn't get there until past 4 a.m., and I can tell you all that was the longest night of my life. I made it home in one piece. Story 5. I'm not sure I would have died, but my instincts kept me from being assaulted. Unfortunately, my friend didn't listen to me and suffered because of it. I grew up in a small town that had contracted a construction project to a company from Norway. At the local bar one night, there was a group of Norwegian men staying at a nearby hotel. My friend and I met them that night for the first time. We hung out with them for a few hours, and they kept offering us drinks all night. At closing time, they invited us to continue the party at their hotel. I pulled my friend aside and told her we shouldn't go. We didn't really know them, and we were also outnumbered. She said it would be fun, and no big deal. My gut told me no, I just didn't feel comfortable, so I refused. She called me a buzzkill and went anyway. The next day she called me screaming. She had spent the night being assaulted by these men, and in her devastation blamed me for not going with her. I tried to comfort her. I begged her to let me call the police. She refused and said she never wanted to see me again. This was a couple of decades ago. Long before the Me Too movement, I didn't know what to do. One of my biggest regrets is not calling the authorities or going to her house to offer support. What I don't regret is not going with her. She can be mad at me, but I couldn't have saved her. We would have both ended up being victims. I moved away shortly after, and I've never seen her again. I still wonder if there's anything I should do now. I just don't know what that would be. She was set on blaming me, but I tried to tell her it wasn't safe. I really did. Story 6. In 2016, my wife and I were in Berlin to explore and visit the Christmas markets. The plan for that evening was to go out to eat and then get the train back to stop at the markets at Breitscheidplatz, as it was close to our hotel. This had been the plan for the entire trip, as it was our last night. We had finished our meal and were headed to the train station. Just as we were about to board the train, my wife decided that she didn't want to go to the markets at Breitscheidplatz and would prefer to double back to a smaller one. We had passed on the walk from the restaurant to the station. I, being a stubborn guy, didn't want to change the plans, but she got her way and we headed back, staying at the smaller market for about 30 minutes. After finally getting the train back, we got off and walked towards our hotel. After a minute or so, there appeared a seemingly never-ending stream of emergency vehicles. Not knowing what was going on, but realizing it was something serious, we sped up and locked ourselves in the hotel room. We had the English language 24-hour news channel on, and after about an hour, reports started to come through about a terrorist attack. A man had driven a truck into a crowd at the Breitscheidplatz market. Obviously, I'll never know if we would have been in the exact spot, but we definitely would have been there at the same time. I'm never allowed to complain about my wife changing her mind ever again. Story 7. Me and two friends were on MDMA and pretty drunk. It was common for us to drunk walk home from downtown. While walking home, we passed a house about two blocks away from the house we all rented together. There were about six guys hanging out on the stoop of this house. They wanted to talk, and my drunk Yohai friends were all too happy to stop and talk with them. After a few minutes of chatting, the guys invited us in for a few extra beers. I had a bad feeling about them, so I didn't want to go inside. But my two friends wanted to go on and hang out for a while. I convinced my friends that we should go home and get my weed to smoke. After getting home, being high, they mostly forgot and were easily convinced not to venture back out just to smoke with those random guys. We found out that 2 days later, two guys got invited into that same house and were robbed, assaulted, and beaten to death by those six men. There is not a doubt in my mind that was exactly what awaited us inside that house. They saw three drunk and high guys and figured we were easy targets. But being guys in a relatively safe city, we just didn't have the fear we should have had about walking into a random house, especially so close to home. Story 8. I'm pretty sure I've told this before, but when I was 12, I started getting allergy shots. It's a 5-year program where you gradually build up immunity. Supposedly, after 5 years, your body will no longer attack those allergens. And the way they do it is by starting with a really tiny dose and building up over the course of many months. You get to a peak level, stay there for a while, and then start over at a lower level and build up again, etc. Anyway, when I was...
Big news! Wayfair's end-of-season sale is here. It's Wayfair's Labor Day clearance. Right now, you can score up to 70% off everything home at Wayfair. Plus, amazing doorbuster deals and 24-hour surprise flash deals on home finds in every style. This is your last chance to score end-of-season savings. And it's happening now. Did we mention fast shipping on everything? Don't wait. Head to Wayfair.com today to score up to 70% off now through September 2nd.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
16, so 4 years into the program, I got my shots. It was at the peak level, which I had been at for a while. You are required to stay 15 minutes in case of a reaction, and then you can go. My dad was with me, and after the 15 minutes were up, he said we could go. I felt fine, but had this moment where I suggested we just wait for 5 more minutes. Within that time, I started having trouble breathing. Side note, often during the visits, they'd have me blow into a tube hooked up to a computer to check my lung strength or capacity or something. It was synced to a Three Little Pigs animation, and the harder you blew, the more houses would fall down. It was good if you could get the brick house down. So we tell the doctor, I'm having a hard time breathing. They take me to the lung test, and I can't even get the first house down. They rush me to a bed and check my blood pressure, which is dropping fast. They put me on oxygen and give me 2 shots of epinephrine, an adrenaline-type injection that gets your heart pumping. They told my dad to call my mom because they weren't sure if I'd make it. Turns out I did make it. I'm not allowed to get allergy shots anymore. And since I only completed 4 out of 5 years, my allergies are still here and annoying as ever. That's my story of how I almost died, but survived almost solely because I stayed longer than I needed to. Had we left, I would have been a couple of miles away from the clinic, and who knows if there would have been time to get back or even know what was wrong. Story 9. When I was 18, I left for a missions group thing during my gap year. This took place on an island in Central America. Earlier that night, everyone had been swimming off the dock, but I didn't want to because of all the jellyfish. Since this was a group of guys fresh out of high school, that decision earned me the title of huge coward. Later that night, I went back down to the docks just thinking about stuff. Wanting to be alone, I obviously snuck out of the house without telling anyone. I saw the water and thought, while no one is around to judge me, I should get over my fear, stop being afraid, and jump in the water. But for some reason, I hesitated and shined my flashlight on the spot I wanted to jump into. There was this weird, clear, worm-looking thing I had never seen before. It wasn't exactly swimming. It was twitching erratically and gently moving with the water. I was wondering what it was when I looked around more and saw a box jelly with a missing tentacle. The tentacles looked exactly like the worm. The box jellies there weren't like the kinds in Australia that can kill instantly, but these were apparently bad enough to send you into shock from the pain. If I had been in the water with no one around to find me, there's a very good chance I would have drowned just from jumping in without checking. Story 10. Back when I was about 18, I had been in a phase where I didn't wear a seatbelt for a couple of years. It would give me really bad anxiety and make me sick, like I'd need to use the restroom. It had probably been about 3 years since I had worn one, but that day I was going to drive to visit a friend at his college, and I decided, you know what? Time to break this mental roadblock. So I put the seatbelt on. About 15 minutes into my drive, I hit a busy road I always used on my way to work. As it takes me to the interstate, I was in the right lane, in a Mitsubishi Galant, and a Ford Explorer was in the left lane. We were both going 60 because that's the speed limit. Suddenly, this little Honda darted in front of the SUV to turn onto the road. The Explorer tried to avoid hitting it and swerved into my lane, which caused me to swerve as a knee-jerk reaction. I went into the grass over a bumpy patch and flipped my car 3 times. It was bad. I saw blood running down my arm. Glass embedded in it, everything hurt. My brain hurt. The whole works. Witnesses told the cops what happened, as did the SUV driver, and I agreed with them. My car looked like an empty can someone crushed sideways. An ambulance came, but I declined and had my parents take me to the ER. Yeah, I didn't want to get hit with a huge ambulance bill. They spent 2 hours digging glass out of my arm from it going through the windshield and making a perfect hole, which surprised me because I thought windshields were supposed to pop out or something. No stitches needed, just badly bruised and sore. My parents were upset I totaled the car. They had just removed gap insurance from it only a couple of days earlier. Needless to say, I think I would have been thrown from the car and killed if it hadn't been for the seatbelt. Story 11. In 2019, the Gilroy Garlic Festival had an attempted mass shooting. A kid came walking through the trees and fence line with an AK-47 drum mag attached and two extended clips on his hip. Where he entered the park was roughly 20 feet away from the booth I was working. The guy was so close to us when he first entered that we didn't see the gun at first. We heard the click of him shoving the drum mag in and cocking it. Me and four other friends were in this booth. I heard the click sound at the same time my buddy noticed the gun. In what is, to this day, the quickest reaction of my life, we looked at each other and tackled our friends out of their chairs. My buddy, the brilliant guy, within 2 seconds realized there was no way for us to get up and out without being in the line of fire. So he grabbed the girls and told them to crawl on their stomachs to the woods, about 10 feet away from us. The instant he told them that, me, him, and our other friend all kind of understood together it was one of those make a move or die situations. The second the girls started crawling, we tipped over the pop-up tent above us to give a slight cover, and we immediately ran as fast as we could. I took no bullets, but I absolutely felt them flying past us and heard them hitting things. My friend who got the girls to crawl away took a ricochet to the butt, and my other buddy broke his ankle running away. But those 30 seconds were the fastest thinking we had ever done in our lives. Later, we realized none of us discussed flipping the tent or running. We just knew in our guts what to do. Story 12. I have Crohn's and colitis, so severe gut pains were nothing new. I stood up and felt like I was stabbed in the stomach. I went and told my boss I had to go home. By the time I got home, I could barely stand up. My wife insisted I get checked out. She ended up driving, and every single pothole was unbearable. We live on a dirt road 40 minutes away from the hospital. I could hardly walk by the time we got there. Turned out I had a ruptured ulcer through both sides, technically a perforated colon. After a week of IV antibiotics, I was released after a few days at home on antibiotics. I woke up one day feeling terrible. Back to the hospital. The perforation had closed but turned into an abscess. They took this 2-foot needle and inserted it through my side to install a drain in the abscess. I spent another week on IV antibiotics while admitted. I was out for a week and had the drain removed, still on antibiotics. A few days later, I woke up sick as a dog and went back to the hospital. I had developed a septic infection, time for a colon resection. They split me from my pelvic bone to my sternum and removed a little over a foot of my colon. 10 days later, I had a PICC line put in for antibiotics and IV nutrients. After another 6 days, I was released. I spent 26 days in the hospital and was out of work for 4 months. Scar tissue from Crohn's was the cause of the tear. Due to the amount of radiation from all the scans I've had, cancer is probably how I'll go out. 2 years post-op with an ileostomy, I feel great. Other than the bag situation, life is good. In short, a literal gut feeling almost killed me. Story 13. Mine wasn't a gut feeling. It was a dream. I grew up in the country on several acres of woods and creeks. I loved any and all animals. I was obsessed. I would bring all kinds of critters home and put them in an aquarium to observe before releasing them back the next day. One day I found a water snake near the creek, so of course I brought it home and put it in the aquarium. That night I had a dream. I was reading our local newspaper. And the headline said a young girl had died after a venomous snake escaped an enclosure and bit her, except it was my name printed in the paper. Along with that day's date, I jolted awake in a cold sweat and immediately took the entire aquarium outside, set it by the tree line, flipped the lid open, and ran back inside. The next day at school, during library time, I looked up a book about snakes, This was pre-internet days. And there was a picture of the snake I had brought home. Not the harmless water snake I had thought, but a water moccasin, also known as a cottonmouth, a snake that could have very easily killed a young child. So yeah, looking back, I realize how utterly stupid I had been and how easily it could have gone terribly wrong. Or maybe nothing would have happened, and I'm just making a big deal out of a scary dream. I don't know. But I like to think something was watching out for me that night. Story 14. I was driving at the speed limit of 70 miles per hour on a highway that I drove daily to go home from work. This particular day, there was an event downtown that had traffic completely stopped for miles. There was an S-bend in the road, though, so you couldn't tell until you were nearly on top of it. I tried to brake, but nothing happened. My brain short-circuited, and I kept slamming on the brake pedal, but still nothing. I was in the left lane of a four-lane highway, with very little time to spare before I nearly hit the wall of cars in front of me. The left shoulder of the road was barely wide enough for a bike, and cars were coming up the on-ramp on the right side. I noticed a small gap between the cars on the on-ramp, but it was in front of me, so I actually sped up to sneak through that gap and onto the grass beside the highway. At one point, I was over 85 miles per hour, knowing I had no brakes, just to make it through that gap. I barely made it and eventually slowed to a stop on the grass. I called my friends to come help, and when they showed up 45 minutes later, I was still clutching the steering wheel with white knuckles, staring straight ahead. It's a miracle I walked away without a scratch. Story 15. South Minneapolis, 1986. Middle of summer. My girlfriend and I were new to the city, having come from a very small town. We lived in a small apartment building that had no security doors. There were only 8 units, and we lived on the top floor, very unsafe. There had been a string of murders in the area at the time as well. We were fast asleep, middle of the night, with the fan blasting on high, when suddenly there was loud banging on our door. I opened the door to see the police asking if we were okay. Yes. Why? There had just been a man at our door trying to break in. He matched the description of the murderer in the area. He had a crowbar in his hand wrapped in a towel. The only thing that saved us was blind luck. Since our building had no security doors, the woman who lived across the hall from us, a nurse, would have the lady who lived below us walk up to her apartment with her. One would take the front stairs, the other the back stairs. When she got to the foot of the stairs, she saw the guy at our door. "What are you doing?" she asked, seeing the crowbar in his hands. "Oh, I'm here to see the girl who lives here," he said as he stepped toward her. At that moment, the lady from downstairs came from the other set of stairs, and it frightened the guy. He ran away. This incident has haunted me for years. It is only luck that we were saved. If that guy had gotten into our unit, we would have been in serious trouble. It's only because the nurse came home at that very moment that nothing happened to me. We moved out shortly thereafter. And I'm quite sure I saw that apartment unit on the news a few months later. The lady who lived below us was attacked, and I think she died. I can't remember for sure. Sorry for the long story. I'm just glad to finally share it with someone after all these years. Story 16. When I was 7 or 8 years old, we lived in the jungle area of Franklin Park, Illinois, at the end of the first 747 runway in the late 1960s, early 70s. When the 747s went overhead, they blotted out the sun and you couldn't hear anything over the engine roar for a full minute. Planes are a lot quieter these days. It was all apartments and was well known for crime, drugs, and factories. My brother, his friend, and I were playing by a factory that was being built out of cement blocks. My brother and his buddy made a fort out of some blocks and found a piece of plywood to use as a roof. One afternoon, a serious storm started to blow in. And I knew there were tornado warnings. They wanted to stay in the fort during the storm because they thought it would be cool. But after a very loud and close lightning strike, I ran for our apartment. The storm lasted about 45 minutes, and the wind and thunder were terrible. My brother never came home, so afterward, I went looking for him. One of the walls of the under-construction factory had collapsed and fallen on our fort. It was flat as a pancake. I walked around trying to see if they were there, but there didn't seem to be any smashed kids. Then I went home and found my brother had just shown up. He said they had gone to his friend's apartment after I left. I took him to see our fort, and we just kind of never talked about it again. Story 17. My spouse and I came back home to our apartment late after traveling. We were both exhausted, but on the way back, made the somewhat odd decision to stop at the grocery store and get steaks to make dinner. There was an alarm going off in the house, but we couldn't find it and decided to just eat. Warning sign, bad decision number one. In the time it took us to cook and eat the steaks, we both started to feel very strange and would see a kaleidoscope every time we closed our eyes. By this point, we realized it was carbon monoxide. But instead of leaving the house, we opened all the windows and laid down on the couch to go to sleep. I remember lying there all snuggled up and thinking, this isn't such a bad way to die, really. That thought snapped me out of it, and I immediately got up and forced my partner out of the house. And by immediately, I mean I got up, made them get up, and then we both weirdly puttered around for another half hour. Carbon monoxide makes you forget how to behave. I packed a bag for us with only half our clothes because I couldn't think straight. We sat in the car and realized we had to call a cab because he couldn't even read any road names. In our own neighborhood, we had horrible headaches, nausea, dizziness, and chest pain for the next 2 days. The moral of the story, get a carbon monoxide detector for every room in your house, especially bedrooms, living rooms, and kitchens. Carbon monoxide is scary, silent, and can kill you in your sleep. Story 18. I was almost 37 weeks pregnant last August and was feeling a bit run down. I was super tired, had a hard time keeping food down, and just felt exhausted. I did have occasional pain in my right side, but I thought it was just my daughter kicking me. I didn't want to go to the doctor, but my husband and father-in-law talked and convinced me to go in. My father-in-law said he had a gut feeling that I needed to be checked out, so I agreed. I was high risk and had complications like gestational diabetes and a previous pregnancy loss. We called the hospital, and the doctor told us to come in. Once there, they drew blood and checked my vitals. Normal blood pressure, normal temperature, etc. We figured I'd be sent home with instructions to drink more water, but then the doctor returned with two others and said they didn't want to alarm me, but I needed a cesarean immediately. It turned out I had developed something called HELLP syndrome, related to preeclampsia. My liver proteins, which should have been in the tens, were in the thousands. My liver was failing. That explained the pain in my right side. Because the liver was failing, my kidneys were overcompensating, and they were beginning to fail too. The only way to stop this was to deliver the baby ASAP, start blood thinners, and monitor me closely. An hour after arriving, I was wheeled into surgery. I woke up the next day after being put under general anesthesia. I had lost 4 pints of blood, needed several transfusions, and spent extra days in the hospital. While I was unconscious, the doctors told my husband he had brought me in just in time. Waiting any longer might have meant organ failure and death for me and my daughter. Today, we're both fine. I've had follow-ups, no permanent organ damage, and my daughter is super healthy. She spent a week in the NICU due to being born early, but she's okay now. I've been told if I get pregnant again, I'll just need weekly blood tests to monitor liver function. Story 19. I was 14, and on holiday in Greece with my family, I got sick, either sunstroke or food poisoning, and spent 4 days unable to hold down any food or water while constantly vomiting. Even a teaspoon of water would result in me throwing up 10 times that amount, all bile. That morning, my parents wanted to take me to the hospital, but I said I felt fine and just couldn't keep anything down. I didn't want to go, so I promised I'd go the next day if I was still sick. They left for the beach, and I stayed behind at the apartment. But as my dad got to the bottom of the stairs, he had a strange feeling that something wasn't right. He turned around, brought my mom with him, and they took me to the hospital. I was angry about it. We waited about an hour in the waiting room before being seen. We explained the situation, and the nurses checked my veins and asked if I had aching or pain coming from my organs, which I did. Then they rushed to get me on an IV drip. It took 12 attempts to get the IV in. After an hour on the drip, they explained that my veins had collapsed. That's why it took 12 tries. And the aching was my organs beginning to shut down. If I had arrived a few hours later, I likely would have died. Basically, if my dad hadn't had that strange feeling, I wouldn't be here. There's an episode of Through the Wormhole that explains something similar. If you want to watch it, the episode is There a Sixth Sense? It's in season 3 or 4, I believe. Story 20. This wasn't me almost dying, but I believe my gut instinct saved my dad's life. A few years after I moved out of my parents' house, they relocated to a very remote cabin miles from the nearest town. One winter, I was headed there to visit, and my dad was returning from a business trip a few hours before me. There were two routes to the cabin, one mostly paved but slightly longer, and the other a more direct dirt road with multiple turns. It was the middle of winter. The dirt road was snow-packed and icy, and with wind chill, it was about minus 10 degrees Fahrenheit. I usually took the paved route, but at the last second, I turned onto the dirt one. Several miles in, I came around a sharp, icy corner and saw a small glint in the ditch about 30 feet below. I kept driving, but had a weird feeling, so I turned back and found my dad's truck in the ditch with the roof caved in. I freaked out and ran down, but he wasn't there. I tried calling him and my mom, but had no signal. I started driving fast, looking for him. I finally got one bar of service and called my mom. She hadn't heard from him and was already worried. Eventually, I found him walking along the road. He had made it several miles, but was hypothermic and said he was ready to give up. He had a winter coat, jeans, and tennis shoes, no gloves, hat, or insulated socks. If I hadn't taken that route on a whim, I wouldn't have found the truck and most likely wouldn't have found him in time. Story 21. I used to commute on my motor scooter to and from work via one of two bridges across our harbor. Both were traffic funnels at rush hour. One summer evening, I was heading up a broad ramp to the bridge when some brightly painted rail cars on nearby tracks caught my eye. I glanced left for maybe 2 seconds. In that time, the second car ahead of me suddenly spotted the entrance to a shoreline park, slammed on his brakes, and put on his signal. The car directly in front of me hit the brakes hard to avoid rear-ending him. When I looked back ahead, I was heading straight for him at 60 kilometers per hour, only meters away. My brain had one of those ultra-fast internal conversations. Bike is toast, right? Agreed, I could go through the rear window or over the car and break my neck. Do I want to live in a wheelchair? Another part of my brain shouted, "Shut up and put the bike down!" I shoved the right handlebar, and the bike leaned sharply, and somehow stuck the turn. You know those insane racers who lean nearly flat to make corners? Apparently, a Honda scooter can do it if you're desperate enough. Unfortunately, I was now headed straight for a wall of cars in the other lane, slammed the left handlebar, another wild turn, and I was upright, roaring past the Buick, missing his door handle by a finger's width, alive, unhurt. I let out a massive breath and drove home like I was on my license test. Lesson learned. Thanks, brain. You're welcome, you idiot. Story 22. I was walking home alone from sledding with friends one night when I was about 13. As I was walking up the road, I noticed a car slowly following me. I assumed the driver was trying to pull into a driveway and sped up to get out of his way. Suddenly, he sped past me and drove ahead. The road ahead was a dead end. I used it all the time to cut through a wooded path to get home. Something felt off. I saw his brake lights near the end of the road, but he wasn't moving. I wasn't scared yet. Just felt something strange. I decided to cut through a yard instead of taking my usual path. I had never gone that way before or since. My gut just told me to do it. As I went through the yards to another street in the neighborhood, I was about 150 feet from a driveway I needed to cut through to get to my backyard. Suddenly, I heard screeching tires and saw headlights. The guy was back. Now I was terrified. I was wearing awkward snow boots and snow pants, trying to run as fast as I could. I got into the neighbor's yard, just 50 more feet to my backyard. I stopped and looked back. He was sitting there at the edge of the driveway. I kept sprinting. He must have thought I was cutting through another yard because he sped off trying to intercept me. I made it into my house and told my parents. We looked out the living room window. There he was, slowly driving past our house. Would I have died? Maybe not. But I think I would have been kidnapped for sure. I'll never know why I didn't just walk into his trap. But my gut saved me that night. Story 23. Had plans to go to a dance with two of my friends and one of the girls' boyfriends. 4 of us in total. The boyfriend was going to drive all of us in his car. At the last minute, I decided to drive myself and just meet them at the dance. I was running a bit late, and I really didn't know this guy at all. I just felt more comfortable driving myself in my own car so I could leave whenever I wanted and not worry about anyone else's plans. I called my friend to tell her, and she was fine with it. We went to the dance and had fun. I ended up leaving a bit earlier because I was called into work for 10 a.m. The next day, they stayed later. Neither of my friends were in school on Monday, which I thought was weird. Long story short, they were in a serious accident on their way home from the dance and were home recovering from their injuries, which is why they weren't in school. They were driving on a main street when a car coming from a side street didn't stop and T-bone them. The main impact was exactly where I would have been sitting had I gone with them. They were all injured. Thankfully, nothing life-threatening. But one of my friends sustained permanent damage to one of her eyes. The other fractured her wrist. The boyfriend had only bumps and bruises, but his car was totaled. Story 24. In October of 2019, I tried to end my life. Seriously, I had hoarded my medication and took over 102 milligram hydromorphone pills, 71 Ativan, 90 plus clonazepam. I also drank 3 bottles of red wine and a large bottle of champagne. I took 30 plus Zopaclone and whatever other meds I had. I think some Seroquel was in there too. I called my ex-boyfriend and told him what I was about to do. I had lied to him shortly before, saying my dog was hit by a car and died, hoping to get attention or sympathy. I can't defend myself there. I don't remember making that call, but when I woke up from my coma, I was told what happened. Our relationship had been toxic for nearly 5 years, and I had severe depression because of it. This wasn't my first attempt, but it was the most serious and easily the worst. I remember swallowing the pills. I remember lying on my bed after. My dog jumped up, put her head on my lap, and rested her paw on my leg. I looked at her. Her eyes, it was like looking into the saddest, most heartbroken creature imaginable. I had let everyone down, but I hadn't even considered how I'd let her down. She would have had to watch me die, completely helpless. But she hadn't given up on me. I was all she had. I was her constant. About 10 minutes after taking the pills, I reached over and called 911. The next thing I knew, I woke up days later in the ICU, intubated. One of my best friends was my nurse. Another friend was the responding officer. They both told me how lucky I was to be alive. The doctors said I'd have to relearn basic functions because of the brain damage. My brother said he sang to me while I was in a coma, and the doctor told him not to expect me to wake up. But I did. I didn't feel lucky. I still wanted to die and tried twice more after that. But those attempts failed. Every time I saw my dog's face, I'll never forget her staring at me. I wouldn't be here if I had locked her out of the room. I should be dead. It may sound strange. A dog saved me. But if I hadn't had that gut reaction, I would be another victim of mental illness. Story 25. So I was really into mushrooms in my late 20s. Just regular edible ones, not psychedelic. I would often pick mushrooms that I knew were safe to eat, bring them home, prepare them and enjoy them. One day I was out in the wild and found a patch of what looked like meadow mushrooms. I was 100% sure they were wood mushrooms, totally safe and edible. But I had this gut feeling of uncertainty, not excitement. Just a feeling that I didn't want to eat them. I don't know how or why. They looked exactly like wood mushrooms. Perfect in appearance. Still on a whim, I decided to check if there were any poisonous mushrooms that looked like them. Turns out there is. It's called the yellow stainer. It probably wouldn't have killed me, but it would have made me very, very sick. There's a simple test. You bruise or scratch them. Wood mushrooms turn pink or reddish. Yellow stainers turn yellow. Mine turned yellow. Story 26. I suffer from hypothyroidism, and my endocrinologist advised me to get an ultrasound on my thyroid as a routine checkup. I did it. And when I returned to his office, I was told they had found 3 tumors on the left side of my neck. He sent me to an ENT specialist for further testing and a biopsy. It came back positive. Cancerous tumors. He explained the surgery, said it would be 4 hours and fairly common. The day of the procedure, that 4-hour surgery turned into 6. The surgeon saw a mass on my chest. Instead of waiting for a biopsy, he decided to remove it to avoid a second surgery and more pain. Later, he told me that it was cancer, spreading to my lungs and heart. He said that if he had waited even a few hours for the biopsy report, instead of acting on instinct, I would have had organ failure and died. Later, I asked my endocrinologist what tipped him off to order the ultrasound. He said my left side looked just a little puffy, and something told him to double check. I was lucky to have doctors who trusted their instincts and acted. I wouldn't be here without them. Story 27. Years ago, when I was in Indonesia, I planned to travel to a nearby island, but my instincts told me not to go. So I stayed in Bali. There was an earthquake on the island I wanted to visit. Bali was affected too. I broke my ankle in an unrelated accident around the same time. Several more earthquakes happened in the following days. The staff at my accommodation carried me downstairs to safety multiple times. The first time, they used a wheelchair. After that, they started using an office chair with wheels. Quicker and easier. I remember watching the parking lot at a nearby mall cave in, windows shattered, a billboard swayed violently. My accommodation remained intact. At one point, I told them, if there's a tsunami, it's okay to leave me. They didn't even respond. They just looked around for places we could go. There was no tsunami, thankfully. Meanwhile, my leg started developing a massive bruise. I had told the doctors the cast felt too tight. They said it was normal. During one earthquake, the staff said, look, a great hospital is right across the street. Your leg looks scary. Do you want to go? I agreed. The cast was way too tight. Dangerously so. The doctor said if it had stayed like that much longer, I could have lost my leg. Maybe even died. My leg looked horrific, deformed, bloodless, covered in welts. I considered flying back to America, but feared blood clots and the cost. Before breaking my ankle, I had booked a flight from Jakarta to Kathmandu. A girl at the accommodation said I could get surgery in Nepal. She had contacts there. It would be cheaper. And she offered help arranging it. I went. Her contacts weren't great. They took me to a hospital I didn't choose. I was vulnerable and went along. After surgery, a nurse told me I wasn't safe alone at night, that I needed someone to stay, or I could be robbed or worse. The doctors wouldn't discharge me, and the contacts refused to help. So I posted on Couchsurfing in desperation. A pharmacology student replied, well reviewed, and agreed to stay. We played board games and barricaded the door. Twice, someone tried to enter, and he yelled at them in Nepali. It wasn't the doctor or staff. The next day, no one at the hospital knew who it was. I recovered for 4 months at the only guest house in Kathmandu, with a ground floor room and easy access. I paid off the contacts and invited couch surfers over for games. I survived. This isn't a neat story, but I think about it often. So many moments where things could have gone wrong, but it worked out. I'm still in Asia during the pandemic, and I'm grateful. Story 28. Over a few years ago, a cousin's friend mysteriously disappeared on a boat while visiting his island. His body was never found, but 2 months later, the shorts he was wearing were discovered. 3 months after that, my cousin's father decided to visit the island. He was originally from there. So my cousin and I tagged along. We couldn't get seats on the seaplane that usually goes nearby, but luckily, or maybe unluckily, a small boat was heading to the island. This boat didn't have seats. It was packed with cargo like wood, iron, and all sorts of other stuff. The weather was really good too. We were ready for the 4-hour boat ride. Everything seemed fine. Around 15 minutes after we set out to sea, the weather suddenly turned bad. We figured it was just a bit of rain. But we were very wrong. It started raining heavily, nonstop. The sea became rough, and the wind was intense. After a while, my cousin's dad went to the toilet, and the captain told him, be careful throwing the bucket into the sea. 3 months ago, a guy was lost on this boat. I think he fell while trying to get some water to clean himself. Yeah, we were on the same boat where that guy had vanished, and now we were caught in another brutal storm. None of us were especially scared, just amazed at the coincidence. We eventually decided to take a nap in the middle of the night, but I was suddenly woken up. I was floating. The boat had almost flipped to one side. I saw people being thrown around, and I myself was heading headfirst toward the sea but crashed into a wooden pillar instead. No one fell overboard, but many of us were inches away from it. and we knew that if anyone had, there would have been no saving them in that weather. And this was the same sea where the guy had disappeared months before. Despite all of this, we decided to continue. Some wanted to wait for the storm to pass, but the majority refused. We reached the island 18 hours later, a trip that normally takes just 4. I'm glad we did. The rain didn't stop for days, not even for an hour. If we had waited, we could have been stranded without food or capsized in worsening conditions. It's been years, but every time it rains and I'm near the sea, I can't sleep. I'll never forget waking up mid-storm with the raging ocean right under my face. Story 29. This just happened last month. I was driving home from visiting my mom, minding my own business on the highway, when a truck pulling a boat trailer got on. I moved into the left lane to pass him, thinking he'd take a while to pick up speed. I had cruise control set at 75 miles per hour, but he ended up going pretty fast, so I pulled behind him and kept going. After a few minutes, I felt like I was getting too close to him, so I decided to pass. Instead of slowing down, I switched lanes and for some reason bumped my speed up to 76. As I was passing, he was behind another car. I'm not sure if he planned to pass and didn't see me, or if he swerved to avoid debris. There was a chunk of tire in between lanes. I'd seen it, so I had already moved left a bit. Good thing I did. I saw the truck swerve, heard something like gravel hitting my car. I looked in the rearview mirror and saw the boat trailer veering into my lane, inches from my car. Then it swung back, I thought. That was close. And then the boat swung into the left lane again, right behind me, fully sideways. The trailer detached from the truck and flipped down the highway. If I had waited even a second longer to pass, or if I'd stayed at 75 instead of 70 going 76, the boat would have crushed me. It would have flipped my car. I want to believe the universe spared me because my pets were with me. They didn't deserve that. But honestly, I think it was my dad watching out for me. That day was a week before the anniversary of his death. I don't think my mom could have handled that. Story 30. I had a super uncomfortable pregnancy and kept going into false labor due to the extreme summer heat. About a month before I was due, I woke up in the middle of the night with what felt like more false labor pains. I tried to tough it out and even talked to the doctor on call, who seemed relaxed about it. The pain felt familiar, but I was overwhelmed with a deep, terrifying sense of doom. I couldn't explain it. I was just scared. I finally decided that even if it was false labor, I needed to see a doctor in person. I wanted someone to tell me I was okay. I drove myself to the hospital. My spouse stayed home with our 2 young kids. And by the time I arrived, I could barely walk. They rushed me from the ER to labor and delivery. Within 15 minutes, they were prepping me for surgery. My spouse had to wake the neighbor just to get to the hospital in time. My uterus had ruptured. The baby was coming out sideways like something from a horror movie. If I hadn't gone in, and if I lived more than 5 minutes from a trauma center with a NICU, neither of us would have made it. In hindsight, I should have called an ambulance. But even with that, if I'd been any farther away, one or both of us would have died. Delivering the baby took 20 minutes, extremely long for a C-section, and repairing the rupture took almost 3 hours. I was awake the whole time under spinal anesthesia. The baby was fine, just had some issues regulating her temperature from being early. We bundled her up like it was the dead of winter through July, August, and September. My recovery was harder, but in the end, we both made it. Story 31. Bit of a graphic story. When I was 15, my family found out I was gay. They completely lost it. At 3 a.m. on a Saturday, they burst into my room screaming and demanding answers. After about 5 minutes of my mother yelling, I finally said yes. She started hitting me, and I refused to hit back. She was still my mom, I say, was, because we haven't spoken in over a decade. She decided we were going to move, blaming my friends, of course. The first real friends I'd had since the divorce pulled me out of my old school. I refused. My grandfather was there too. They tried dragging me out of the room by my legs. I kicked back and bolted for the door. My grandfather caught me in the hallway and strangled me against the wall. Lifted me clean off the ground. I kneed him hard enough to loosen his grip and escaped. I was in boxer briefs, barefoot, in October, in Michigan. I ran alongside the main road toward town. I didn't stop at neighbors when they were family friends. I kept running until I saw a trailer with a light on. I banged on the door, screaming for help. A dog barked and woke an elderly couple. They let me in and called the cops. They gave me a green and black plaid robe with paint stains. When the cops arrived, they took photos. I hadn't realized until then. My neck was bleeding. My grandfather's fingernails had torn my skin. My family told the cops I had started the fight and hit my mom. It was five adults against one 15-year-old. I went to jail until a juvenile center had space. I turned 16 locked up. And honestly, it was one of the best birthdays I ever had. The judge made me go back home. He said if I filed for emancipation, he'd deny it, claiming I was unfit to be on my own. I lived under their roof for over a year. They mentally tortured me, called me slurs daily, told me I'd die of AIDS, tried to push me into violence so they could have me arrested again. I had to restrain myself every day. It really messed me up. I have trust issues, diagnosed PTSD. But when I was 21, I called the SUICE hotline. I wasn't suicidal, but I couldn't control my thoughts anymore. They helped me find sliding scale therapy I could afford as a screen printer. It changed my life. It took years, but it helped. During the pandemic, my PTSD came roaring back. The hotline helped again. I'm in a good program now. I don't have much, but I have a few amazing friends I'd never trade. They are the sunny days I fought to reach. Thank you for reading. My family were abusive drug users my whole childhood. If you want to know more, just ask. I'm open about it because others need to know. What people do to you doesn't define you. How you rise from it does. Story 32. I wouldn't consider it a gut decision per se, but rather remembering wise words I was just beginning to understand. This was back in high school. I was sitting in the back of the classroom, getting ready to head to my next class as the bell rang. The aisles between the seats were narrow, so if someone stood still in one, you couldn't get through. That's exactly what happened to me. As I was making my way to the door at the front of the room, my aisle was blocked by a guy talking to his friend, who was standing in the next aisle over. I waited maybe a minute to see if he would move. He wasn't looking directly at me, but I figured he could see me out of his peripheral vision. If he did, he just ignored me. I politely said, "Excuse me," but he still didn't move. At that point, I thought he was being rude, so I tried to edge my way past him. Unfortunately, I ended up bumping into him more than I intended, and he shoved me forward. I looked right at him, trying to size him up to see if I could take him in a fight. He was about my height and build, so I figured the odds were decent. As I considered this, I remembered something I had recently learned in church about turning the other cheek. I dropped the thought of fighting. I was past him now anyway, and it wasn't worth it. I continued on my way while he glared at me. The next day, I didn't see him in class, or the next day, or the one after. A week went by, and I asked a classmate what happened to him. Turns out he had been arrested for assault, possibly even murder, along with other gang members. If I had gone ahead and fought him that day, he and his crew could have easily found me walking home after school, as I normally did. Maybe I wouldn't be here telling this story now. Story 33. Believe or disbelieve this story if you want. I'm just going to tell you what happened. If someone else told me the same thing, I'd probably have a hard time believing it too. But it happened to me. A friend and I were walking home from school. We were on a main road, not some back alley or anything. I think it was a Silver Crown Vic, though I'm not great with car models. This happened over a decade ago. The car suddenly stopped right in the middle of the road next to us, and five or six Hispanic men jumped out. They were dressed like they were headed to a formal event. Suits and all, they pulled out firearms and pointed them at us, shouting in Spanish. I don't speak much Spanish, so I didn't know what they were saying. It felt like forever, but in reality, it was probably only about 3 or 4 seconds. The driver shouted something, and the men got back in the car and sped off. My decision in that moment was pretty simple. Don't move, I thought to myself. Well, we're out in the open. There's nowhere to hide. If we run, they'll shoot us. So I just stood there. Maybe they were looking for someone else and realized we weren't who they were after. There were a few suspicious deaths in the area around that time, so maybe they were connected. All I know is that standing still probably saved my life. It might not be a heroic decision, but it was the right one. Story 34. I live up north. where winters are brutal. One day it was snowing hard and the wind was blowing like crazy, gusts that would suddenly stop and then come back even stronger. I was getting onto the interstate when I hit an icy patch. A strong gust of wind hit at the same time, and my car started spinning all over the road. I couldn't keep it straight. Eventually, my car spun so much that I ended up facing oncoming traffic. That's when I saw a semi coming right at me. My car was stopped. One part of me was still in shock, trying to process what was happening, but another part knew if I didn't move off the road, I was going to die in a head-on collision. While I was thinking that, my body was already steering toward the side of the road. I gently pressed the gas pedal because I knew if I hit it too hard, the tires would spin and I wouldn't move fast enough. I managed to steer off the road just as the semi whipped past. Maybe half a second later, I sat there in shock, white-knuckling the steering wheel, trying to collect myself enough to get back on the road. I remember seeing other drivers pass and look at me, and I wondered what they thought. Honestly, I still wonder if that semi-driver remembers me too. If he saw what happened and thinks about how close we both came to disaster. Story 35. When I was in sixth grade, my friend had two Rottweilers that I had known since they were puppies. Let's just say his dad had some questionable ideas about raising dogs and believed in showing them who's boss. There was no positive reinforcement, just fear. They were shop dogs and were never allowed inside the house. Now to the sketchy situation, I went into the garage to grab a soda from the fridge and patted Zeus and Zoe on the head like usual. Zeus was easily a 125-pound Rottweiler, and Zoe wasn't much smaller. I had always gotten along with them just fine. I turned around and started to open the fridge when the hair on the back of my neck stood up. I spun around to see Zeus giving me what I can only describe as a silent, sinister stare, completely motionless. That gut feeling kicked in, full force. Something was wrong. I slowly backed out of the garage, keeping eye contact with him, a pit growing in my stomach. The second I broke eye contact at the door, Zeus charged at me, snarling. There was nothing my 11-year-old self could have done to fight off a dog that size. I slammed the door and ran to tell my friend that something was seriously wrong. He shrugged it off and went to the garage to prove nothing was wrong. The second he opened the door, both Zeus and Zoe started snarling at him, and he slammed it shut in shock. Of course, his dad went in and beat the hell out of them, like he always did. 2 months later, Zeus attacked a full-grown man in that same garage and sent him to the hospital with serious injuries. If I hadn't trusted that weird gut feeling and gotten out when I did, I probably would have become a grim statistic. His dad ended up putting both dogs down and blamed the breed, not his horrible methods of raising them to be fearful and aggressive. To this day, I've seen plenty of aggressive dogs, but I've never had another dog stare at me the way Zeus did. Story 36. A few years ago, me, my mom, and my uncle were driving across the country, Nigeria. That day, there was a terror attack, and the terrorists were shooting at cars and kidnapping people. Our car got shot, swerved off the road, and crashed into some plants before flipping onto its side. My uncle must have had a panic attack. He immediately tried to get out of the car. My mom locked the doors and told him to stay low and keep still, but it was too late. He had already started trying to climb out through the window. The terrorists reached our car and got him easily, since he was already halfway out. After that, they demanded that my mom and I get out of the car, or they'd shoot. I don't know if they really wanted ransom or if they were running out of time, but they fired a few warning shots at each of us, cursed, and then moved on. We stayed in the car for what felt like hours before even peeking out. Eventually, we made it somewhere we could call the authorities. Thankfully, we were out of immediate danger. I guess it was my mom's gut decision that saved us. Honestly, I think I was just frozen the whole time, completely petrified. In case anyone's wondering, we were able to get my uncle back from the terrorists through police intervention. He later told us that he had seen them kill at least two people who didn't have anyone able to pay ransom. Story 37. It was the early 90s. My parents were doing missionary work in Madagascar, and I was a kid along for the ride. I caught a nasty case of malaria in Fianarantsoa, where we were living. I didn't even know what malaria was at the time. I had a caretaker named Dr. Joan, a devout Catholic and one of my mom's good friends and colleagues. I remember feeling like something was terribly wrong. I cried out for help and passed out. Joan heard me, came in, and found me unconscious in my room. She immediately performed CPR, which worked, and called my parents and emergency services. She refused to let me go alone and rode with me to the hospital, holding my hand the entire way. She stayed with me all night. She kept me awake and engaged, asking me math problems and telling stories, doing anything to keep me conscious until the doctors and nurses could take over. According to the doctors, who were shocked by how well I pulled through, I likely wouldn't have made it if she hadn't acted as quickly as she did. It turns out the hospital was overwhelmed that night. My bed was crammed in with many others. Some of the other patients had malaria like me and didn't survive the night or even the rest of the week. It's terrifying to think about what might have happened if I hadn't cried out, or if Joan hadn't been there, or hadn't known CPR. Rest in peace, Joan. You were my guardian angel. I miss you so much. And thank you for saving my life.
Hey there, are you sitting down? Good, because Wayfair's end of season sale is here, and you can shop it from your couch. It's Wayfair's Labor Day clearance, and it's on now. Right now, you can score up to 70% off everything home at Wayfair, like up to 50% off outdoor furniture and decor, and up to 70% off area rugs, plus amazing doorbuster deals, and 24-hour surprise flash deals on Wayfair home finds in every style. And get it all with fast shipping on everything right to your door. From furniture to faucets, this is your last chance of the season to score huge deals at Wayfair. Don't let the final days of summer pass you by without shopping these end-of-season savings. So don't wait. Like summer, these savings won't last. Head to Wayfair.com today to score up to 70% off everything home. Celebrate your holiday weekend with can't-miss savings before they run out. Shop Wayfair's Labor Day clearance now through September 2nd at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free, at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.